Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And it's still Trader's Edition. We're not talking about food, but we are talking about Kristen Kish. Today, so joke's on us. We did not realize that Peacock is releasing these in 3-episode tranches every week. So we got a lot to cover. We were just going to ho-hum our way to the beginning of Top Chef in March, one a week, but here we are. So today we're going to talk about episodes 2 and 3 of The Traitors. So spoilers, if you haven't gotten to the end of episode 3, maybe do that and then listen to this episode. But yeah, I'm just so happy to have the like 3 at a time. It's so juicy.
I know. It's thank God for it. Honestly, like, you know, I actually wouldn't mind if there was more of a pause. Like I am really enjoying the like cultural moment that comes with the season of Traitors just from like a, you know, chronically online perspective. Yes. Some pretty fun sound bites coming out of this. But yeah, like you said, Nancy, there's a lot to cover today. So I think we should kick it off with episode 2.
Let's begin.
Okay, Nancy, what is your amuse-bouche reaction to this episode 2, season 4, Traitors?
Okay, so we'll start with episode 2. My amuse-bouche for episode 2 is that challenge seemed really far. They dropped them very far away from the castle. Am I, like, right? They were far.
It was at least downhill.
Part of it.
Yeah, it was a pretty like hilly descent, but yeah, it was intense. I don't know that I would like to hear, I would like to understand more if like people go through any sort of like training. Like this is like back in the old days of Top Chef, remember where they used to have them like do crazy like fish for their own, you know.
Oh, fish. I love when they have to fish for their own fish.
Yeah. Like, that's I wonder if people's like managers are like, yo, you got to like get in shape to go on Traitors because you might be dragging like a Roman throne.
It is a really insane balance of stuff because like there are, you know, the more physical reality shows. I would put the games in this, like Survivor is an incredibly physical show. And then there are like the housewives who literally sit around and talk like that is the show, and yet all of these people have to push heavy objects up a hill.
Yes, I love it. I love it. I know it's the great equalizer. Okay, I would say my amuse-bouche reaction, we got our first murder in plain sight.
Oh,
which
my
I
God.
Love. I loved it. This one was really fun too. I honestly thought like the traitors were kind of screwed just the way that they were moving. But it was a fun ep, I think. And it started with a bang. So yes. we leave the end of season, the end of episode 1 ends on a bit of a cliffhanger. The traitors have gotten their short list from the secret traitors. On that list, we have Ian, Mark, Eric, and Rob R. Rob R is, of course, a traitor himself. Nancy, who was your guess for who was getting before we get the breakfast scene? Who were you thinking was going to go?
I admittedly did guess Ian because he was featured a lot in the episode, and he clearly was very smart.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. This was not a surprise. It would have been more surprising had they not done that, I think.
Yeah.
I think, and this is a maybe point to just 2 and 3 together, but I've been surprised to see that the gamers have not really like gelled together the way that we've seen in past seasons. Like,
yes.
They seem like a lot more of a kind of like federated group.
That's a really good point. I thought you were going to say something that I've been hearing a lot in the zeitgeist that I do agree with, which is like, they're really targeting the gamers. And now that I know who the secret traitor is, I am even more confused by the targeting of the gamers. Mm-hmm. But it's a very – people are saying like this is a very Peacock-heavy season. And like they're – essentially the people coming from other networks are not getting as much screen time and all getting killed. Because like essentially the entire Bravo clan is intact, with the exception of like the round table that happened in episode two, where they all turned on their own. But it was like, I am annoyed that all of the gamers are getting eliminated early on, because A, as we know, I'm now a huge Survivor stan. And so like, I want to see these people survive. I won't stop talking about it. But the other thing I'll say is like, if I wanted to watch Housewives, I'd just go watch Housewives. Like, right. I don't want this show to just be all the people who are on the same show hanging out with each other. That exists in its own little kingdom on Peacock. I want, like, some of the beauty was like these people making unexpected friendships with people else in other universes. I'm a little annoyed at how segmented it is.
I agree. And I have a thought on that. I'm going to put a pin in it. But to bring it back to the breakfast scene, I love the breakfast scene. It's just like the best part, you know, fresh start. Who's going to walk through that door? Mm-hmm. I think we have, you know, of course, the three known traitors, Candace, Rob, and Lisa, are, you know, in the dark, obviously, on who the secret traitor is. So are we at this point. But there is a lot of speculation that it's Jam Jam. And so breakfast scene kicks off, and we see everybody come through that door. But like you said, Ian.
Wait, we do need to pause for Dorinda, who gets a standing ovation and starts crying because she makes it through the door.
Huge. I love that everybody in the room was, on that side.
Rooting for her to be alive.
And I'm really glad they didn't make her a traitor, too. I'm really glad that she's been fun to watch as a faithful. But no, that was a beautiful moment. And then everybody else was like, yeah, and we survived, too.
Yeah, we're all here, too. I will say it is funny. Like, I, as now a Real Housewives fan, God, the amount of content that I ingest in a year is disgusting. But as I have watched this on Real Housewives, I really like Dorinda. I haven't gotten to the part where apparently she gets awful. So, like, please don't come for me. But it is kind of weird that everyone is obsessed with Dorinda surviving. Like, in past seasons, we have not felt bad for the person who was eliminated first. I don't know why there's this, like, swell of emotion for Dorinda specifically. I am not mad about it. I like seeing her on my screen. It is just weird that everyone is like, we need to keep Dorinda in. We hurt her feelings last time.
Yeah, it is funny. We'll see how that like progresses with the season, you know, and how attitudes eventually have to change with that. But so all to say, Ian's out. Anything else you want to add from breakfast? I think that my observations are just generally that Candace and Lisa are at some point, this is maybe a prediction, at some point they're going to be too much. They're going to give more away than I think the group is currently picking up on. I'm honestly shocked that none of the traitors' names have come up yet, just like even casually. Because you have Candace and Lisa are always like, I get the sense that they're always kind of trying to center themselves in these breakfast scenes.
I wonder how much of that is editing.
You're right.
But also, I was going to say that comment for episode three. Like, Candace is doing too much.
That starts to really ramp up for
almost
sure.
Almost akin to Danielle last season, where she would be like shaking and crying when someone would get sent home.
Oh, my God.
And it was like, what's this bitch doing? But we do have to remember that there's a ton of editing at play here. Like, I was watching, again, like my new favorite Instagram account, It's Live On Air, who I have invited on the pod. Please come on the pod. She's a former reality TV producer, and she talks about it. And she was saying, like, it probably takes them 2 hours to film the breakfast scene, and it probably takes them, like, 4 to 5 hours to film the round table. Like, they are getting – there is so much footage that is left on the cutting room floor of these scenes. Like, they are constructing a story.
So crazy. There. Yeah, that's a great point. Okay, so we move into the challenge for today's episode, which is – like we were kind of alluding to at the top, sort of like a chariot race back to the castle. So we see the contestants get like dragged out from at a healthy distance from the castle. And the mission today is essentially
an unhealthy distance, by the way. It was far.
The mission is essentially the challenge is essentially there's three chariots and three stops, and the group has to work together to basically race their way back to the castle. There's no first, second, third or anything like that. They all need to just make it back. And along the way, along those three stops, there will be money and shields that the group can discover. The shields essentially grant access to the seat on the chariot. So whoever is seated on the chariot when it arrives back to the castle is shielded from the round table. From being murdered. obviously, there's some strategy that goes into that, right? If you start in that chariot, you're probably not ending in that chariot. So we get to see some of the like mental gymnastics and strategy that people are approaching that situation with. I think to me, Colton was one of the more interesting people to watch during this challenge for that reason. But there's $24,000 at stake, and they. Interestingly, do not have anybody keeping time. So they have to manage their time and get back to the castle in 45 minutes without really knowing when exactly that is. So we start off with Candace, Tiffany, and I actually missed the third person who's on the chariot. And we're off and we're headed to the first stop. Nancy, what did you think of this challenge overall?
I thought it was clever because the strategy changes throughout the course of the challenge. So like where you might want to be at the beginning of the challenge is not where you want to be at the end of the challenge. And there's a lot of posturing that has to happen in between. And so they get to each stop and they find buried in the woods like bags of money. But then there are also these two shield coins at every stop. And whoever finds a shield coin can go and replace someone on a chariot. And I thought it added a very interesting dynamic that there's like a game within a game that they're playing. And you see a lot of the players who find the shield coins immediately give it to like a tiny woman, essentially.
Yeah.
A lot of sexism going on in this challenge, but whatever.
Why were they doing that? Steven was like, my mom wouldn't be proud of me if I did. I'm like, you're on a competition show. Like, what? Why did we need to do that?
The person is in a chariot for approximately 3 minutes at a time.
Right.
And it's not like some grand chivalry to like let the woman sit. That was a little overblown, I thought, in terms of like the way they were spinning it. It was just that I think they were all hoping that like if they did a nice deed at the front, someone would do a nice deed at the back for them.
Right.
But we see essentially all of the housewives swapping places on these chariots. And they're like, no, I just want to sit. And I was like, this is like, I'm not interested in your like fake damsel in distress vibes at all. But it gets really spicy towards the end. So we have, I believe it's, I can't even remember who's on what, but the big story here is that Jam Jam finds a shield coin and Michael Rapaport, who is the most annoying human being ever. Who has found nothing this entire time. He's maybe found a few bags of money, but like not really contributed materially to this challenge. Comes out of nowhere.
Nowhere,
and starts yelling at Jam Jam being like, I thought I was going to get that shield.
I don't know what he was thinking with that. Like there at no point at any point was there ever like a comp – like the group collectively did not approach that from that perspective at any point during this challenge. There was never a, hey, when you find a shield, like let's debate what makes the most sense. And it's too early in the game to move like that. Like, yeah, sure. When we're later on and there is real, you know, when we actually have like true coalitions and groups and they're like, okay, we need to save one of our own. They're on the show. There's none of that. And so it was like so out of pocket. I agree. Like, what was this guy thinking? Like,
it's crazy. I don't know. I feel like Michael Rapaport, I don't really know his like game or his whatever you want to call it. I know he's a bit of like a figure, a resented figure. Did you see the reel I sent you this morning? It's like a video of him. I don't know when this video was taken, but it is now circulating on the internet because he's like on the Traitors. And it's, he's in New York City and he's making a selfie video and he's like, I hate cancel culture. And someone just lobs a huge snowball at him and like clocks him in the back of the head. And he, like, you hear Alcamon be like, what the fuck? And then you hear the guy being like, fuck you, Michael Rappaport. Like, you're so annoying. We hate your shit. Like, it is.
Oh, my God.
I sent this to you. So check your Instagram.
Okay, I'll watch.
Very funny.
I've just never heard of this guy either before this show.
Yeah, I've heard of him because I know he's a Housewives super fan. And he frequently is on Watch What Happens Live.
Oh, that's right. You said that.
But it says he's an actor. Like, what has he been in? Maybe let's leftover that for next episode.
Okay,
like,
yeah, yeah.
We need his to do career. A history of Michael Rappaport because I don't know what his claim to fame is.
I will say, like, I'm glad he's there. Like, you need an instigator. There's not enough instigating in this group yet. And so, you know, put that in the ether. The other thing, like I mentioned, I think I really enjoyed seeing Colton have a strategy here. We didn't really get like a lot of visibility into other people's strategy besides like Michael, who went like full, like off the reservation. But, Colton's approach was very much, I'm going to focus on money the first two stops, and then I'm going to focus on finding a shield at the last one. And he did find a shield, correct?
He
kicked Lisa off. And the thing that annoyed me about this challenge, honestly, was like that the like begging of, no, please, like, let me stay. I'm like, get off. Like, I just, that was annoying. And I was like, what's the point of this? You need to like eject from the seat now.
Well, you know what? If I can put my new gamer hat on with this.
Yeah.
There is something to be said for alliance building early on, regardless of whom you think a traitor is.
Yeah.
You do need to have alliances. And we see this in episode 3 with Tiffany.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about that. Yeah.
That's great. And like, again, regardless of if this person is a traitor or not, you need to have coalitions of votes at the end of the day. Like, the mechanic of this show is being in the majority.
Yeah.
And so I do kind of understand the posturing and like, no, give it to this person, give it to this person. Because even though it's a split second and even though like most people, unless you're Michael Rappaport, aren't going to take it personally.
Right.
There is something to be said for currying favor and signaling whom your alliance is early on.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a fair point.
So I get that a little bit. I do think it's a bit overplayed, and I do think that people like take it a bit too seriously.
Yeah.
But my guess is that Jam Jam, who's a Survivor winner, is like, okay, you know, who's going to be valuable to me as this game goes on, and who do I want to owe me one?
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember. I need to like go back. I must go back and watch other traders. I feel like we're kind of slow out of the gate in this series on the like allyship and alliances.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the group makes it back to the castle with 10 minutes to spare. So they wound up getting $22,500, which was a nice haul. Michael continues his shit stirring and basically was told, you know, save it for the round table. Okay. I want to talk, we're you know, everybody's debriefing after the challenge. We're starting to hear a little bit more of the murmurings on where people's like heads are at with traitor, secret traitor. There's a lot of heat on Donna. We have Candace that's kind of mulling over the idea of Donna. Colton was like a pretty staunch, like, you know, driver of that. Colton, to be honest, is the only person that I'm getting any. He's kind of reminding me of Zac Efron's brother.
Yep.
Last season, it's like he's sort of like the nice guy that's like really democratic in his approach to evaluating someone's like traitorship, so to speak. And so he's kind of the only one that's really starting to. I think we may see him kind of like continue to move in this direction, being a little bit of that like faithful leader. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about, you know, so obviously, spoiler alert, at this point, nobody knows Donna is secret traitor, including us. Mm-hmm. Were you suspicious of Donna?
Here's the thing, and this is something that is a fault for me in my life. It's why I famously have really bad gaydar. Like, when something is too obvious, I'm like, it can't be.
Yeah.
So when everyone was like, it's got to be Donna, I was like, there's no way it's going to be Donna, like the old lady. That's right. Too obvious. It's too obvious because it's too like, old lady has to be nice. I bet she's a traitor. Like, let's give her a different personality. I was like, wow, what a good plant. What a good shield, for lack of a better word, for who the real secret traitor is.
Right. Yeah. It's a bit of an Occam's razor situation. Like, or like not. I think like having that mindset with the show like Traitors like might I don't know. There's always like the constant subversion, but just like generally the idea that like the most obvious maybe is just the right is what's happening. I was not suspecting her at all. I actually just thought she kind of was just like didn't really know how to be on a reality show and just, you know, she's a bit older than the other contestants. Yeah. Like, you know, and we look at someone like I would say the same goes for like Kristen or even Ian. Who's the other guy that's like Kristen's kind of been moving around the castle with? They're both a bit more like reserved and less like in the fray of all the debate. They're sort of like at this stage, like kind of on the fringe, and it's hard to read whether that's just like kind of characteristic of their personality or whether there's like something suspicious at play. I was like kind of not really suspicious of her for the same reasons you mentioned, but I rewatched this episode knowing what I know, and there were I actually found like a decent amount of tells, really mostly in her just sort of like low level anxiety. Like you can kind of just see it in her face, like just being a little nervous, anxious. I actually think this is, again, like we talked about the editing thing. I think they did quite a bit of work to kind of tamp down the audience, like leading the audience in this direction, even more so than I think people in the house were aware. Because I actually think that the folks in the house may have had a lot more, like may have been a lot more subconsciously aware than we were led to believe. Because, you know, we can save that for episode 3, but yeah, at this point I was surprised by that. I also think on the other side of this, the other name, so let's just get to the round table. The first name out is Donna. We talk about that. Donna's point is like, you know, you're wasting a vote. I'm just low-hanging fruit. And, you know, Natalie is, you know, counter to that is doesn't mean you're not a traitor. Yeah. And then we have Portia's name get thrown in the mix by Ron, who I predicted was kind of going to fly under the radar. He very much did not. He came out like, here's the facts. And I will say I was not really suspicious of Portia, even though he kind of like laid out some whatever compelling arguments. She just struck me as somebody who just sort of like talks before she thinks. And so these like slips of the word, I was like, I don't really think that's what's happening here. I also just didn't think that there was ever going to be a world where we would have three housewife traitors.
Yeah, which of course they don't know on their side.
Right.
And like there is always a housewife as a traitor. So I kind of get it from their perspective. But like I don't get why everyone caught on, like glommed onto the fact that she said, well, there are four of them. There are four in every single season. Like, why were they so, like, how would you know?
And maybe there
are four,
like,
traitors in every season.
At certain points of the season, but by and large, like, that's usually the, like, stasis. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, that's an incredibly informed guess.
Yeah, that was, yeah, that like, was a weird one. And then, so, like, oh, well, we murdered, or, like, I didn't buy that. But,
a big swing and a miss.
I just think that I think honestly, like, that the group has sort of like aligned on these two names, and largely driven by Ron is like that nobody else is really sticking their neck out yet. Nobody else is like wanting to like be a shit stir, with the exception of like Michael and Jam Jam. But I think people just hate Michael so much that they're just not going to listen to him anyways.
Yep. Michael's going to stay on for a long time, unfortunately. As much as we hate him and find him odious, he is good TV.
Yeah, for
sure. But also, he's such a good shield. He stirs up so much stuff that the traitors are not going to get rid of him because he, you know, gives them a ton of cover.
Totally,
unless he gets banished. And I think people aren't going to banish him because there's always going to be contention over whether he is or isn't.
Yes, so true. And he also had a bit of a slip up at the round table when he said, like, when we killed Ian. What do you mean when we killed Ian? It's like when we, the royal we, like, I just, yeah, I don't know. That also, I think people are just, I'm excited to like get out of this, like, oh, you said it like this way. It's crazy that everybody fixated on this and everybody glazed over the fact that Candace like fully just like walked back like a huge statement last
episode.
Huge
lie.
Huge lie. Okay, well, we're only like halfway through this, so.
Yeah, we gotta keep it rolling.
The vote winds up being like pretty even between Donna and Portia, but in the end, Portia kind of like ekes out ahead.
Yep.
And is the first to get got this episode, and she was a faithful. So sucks. But sucks.
Notably, Lisa Rinna votes for Portia, and normally you don't see housewives turn on each other like that. So
right. Right. Yeah.
But I'm glad that she did, because there are all these like false alliances coming into the show. Like, housewives are gonna stick together, that right. type of stuff. And like, you are in a new arena. We cannot let social norms of other shows, other networks, other things bleed into the Traitors. Play the fucking game. Just because you're on, just because you share a production crew back home doesn't mean you guys need to work together.
Yeah, like you don't even live in the same physical, you're not even like all, you know, housewives in New York. Okay. So probably the best part of this episode, though, is like I said at the top, we get our first murder in plain sight. Nancy, do you want to run us through like how this murder in plain sight worked?
Yes. So the traitors go into their confessionals and they are given a long note that says, tonight you will commit a murder in plain sight. In the kitchen behind the portraits is a deck of tarot cards, or like spirit cards, whatever they call them. Tarot TM. And on that deck of cards will show the four people up for murder tonight. You have to go find that deck of cards and then take the card of the person that you want to kill, light it on fire in the breakfast room.
Oh my God. It was so many steps. Yeah, it was so many steps.
So for the listeners, essentially what this means is they have to like do all this weird maneuvering while everyone is sitting around in the castle. So people are in the kitchen. So they got to empty out the kitchen. People are in the breakfast room. They got to empty out the breakfast room.
Right.
So, Bits, how does any self-respecting person exit a room in mass?
Conga line.
Conga line.
That was the stupidest idea ever. What was she thinking? And honestly, like, it made me look worse on the rest of it. Like, how did you guys think nothing of that? Like, the second that happens, I shouldn't say that. Everybody was stupid. Mark clearly clocked it, you know. Conga line, hide. Rob. Yeah. Oh, it was Rob. Oh, I wrote Mark. Who's Mark? Rob, you're right. Rob C.
Oh, Mark Ballas.
I don't know.
The Dancing with the
Rob
Stars
C, guy. You're right. But so he's like actively avoiding the conga line. He does not figure out like that they're trying to like vacate certain rooms. I actually will say though, so what would have been your strategy for emptying a room? Like, we have all those people in the kitchen. I guess she technically emptied them from the breakfast room. That's where Candace was trying to get.
She actually emptied them from the den.
She was just trying to get everybody out of wherever they were.
Like, I just want to say, I come from a long line of women who can empty a room with a fart. So I would have done that. my great-grandma Regina, famous.
Cleared it
up. So I would say that's probably how I would do it.
That's not a bad idea.
Something stinky.
That actually is a great idea, because you don't want to own up to it, but you kind of have to be like, guys, I'm really sorry. And in a way, like, there's nothing premeditated about a fart, you know?
Yeah. I actually think the hardest room to evacuate was the kitchen.
I agree.
People are coming in and out in weird droves, and they're just chilling in there. So
yeah, they're sad.
I think
that,
to me, was the hardest part of that.
Yeah.
And then, like, I don't think that you needed to evacuate the room that Candace did with the conga line. Like, everyone was gathered.
Yeah.
She needed actually people to be in there as opposed to leave in there. And because she led the conga line past the breakfast room, which is the room they have to go into.
You're right. And but at the same, it actually worked better than I think she could have even planned for, because
she got so
Rob was in there. So we had another traitor in the kitchen, and he kind of knew, okay, something is happening here. Let me just figure that out. And I think the way that Rob like doubled back after like being on the conga line was just like perfectly in character. Is what I would expect from someone like him, to be like, oh, no, I'm not doing this.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
So it, but it, I don't like, that was complete luck that that were like, because if Rob wasn't in the kitchen, like probably I wouldn't be surprised if people didn't leave. Like, so I agree. Yeah. Like, it was a weird, and it was, I think the only reason it wasn't more suspect is just because how much these people are probably just sitting around doing absolutely nothing.
Nothing for hours. Yeah.
Yeah. So that,
but we do have to talk about the big story. I know that you mentioned it, but Rob C., Survivor player, immediately is like, I think the traitors are doing a murder in plain sight. And he pulls, I think, Tiffany aside. And he's like, if anyone hands you anything or touches you, like, stay out of the way of people. Be as invisible as possible.
Yeah.
And then he also says that to Candace, the one who starts the fucking conga line.
Yeah, yeah.
That, but to me, for someone who was so perceptive in that moment, it felt like a huge miss that he did not perceive that the person leading the line might be the problem.
I agree. But I actually read that, and I think I maybe overread it, and I think I'm being too generous. Like, I kind of read that as him, like, sussing her out. Like, being a bit more toe-to-toe, like, yeah, I think they're trying to murder in plain sight. But I can't separate whether they're like, that's just me projecting or not.
I just think that would be a bad move, because that makes you a target.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you're right.
If you show like great acumen for understanding what's happening in this castle. But then the other crazy thing is that it is sheer coincidence that he is the one who gets killed, because he says that to Candace. And Rob and Lisa are the ones who end up in the breakfast room. So, like, the whole serendipity of this murder, like, they just, as we say in the corporate world, failed up. Like, they kept making teeny tiny mistakes everywhere and coordinated it perfectly, because Lisa and Rob happened to pick the person who has figured this whole shindig out. Incredible.
So fun. I love that that happened. I love the way that they went about doing it, like sitting there playing a chess game. Like, do you really think Lisa Rinna and Rob R can even play chess?
I believe the way that we Rob got the can editing, play chess.
We saw like Tara Lipinski like kind of watching. Like, she probably wasn't. It maybe like came across that way with editing, but that was a super clever move. I don't know if that was like production in his ear being like, yo, try this, but I thought that was really smart. That was really, really smart.
Yeah,
and
those himbos can surprise you.
Yeah, yeah. And I genuinely can't think of a smarter way to go about it, because it's like, it's the one thing that only requires two people to be talking close, face to face, like out in the open. So cool, so clever. So anyways, that brings us to the end of this ep. Rob C gets lit up, and Candace has no clue, but wow, like you said, does she luck out?
It is really fun to add the element of the traitors like being in the dark. We have this with the secret traitor. We have this in this moment. Like,
yeah.
She was genuinely surprised in the morning when Rob is the one who's killed. She's like, yes, that's great. But then she makes that dumb fucking speech.
Oh my God. And draws
attention to herself. That,
I know.
That was the one part where I was like, you're doing too much. You're doing too much.
Too much. Well, let's talk about ep three. Let's get into that breakfast scene.
So we're hanging in the breakfast room, and we discover that Rob C. has been murdered. And then Candace gives a long toast to him.
Yeah. Like, he was so in tune with everybody. I'm like, what are you?
What? You've been here for three days.
Yeah, like, and why would that be, like, a thing you compliment somebody on? Clearly he wasn't, because he didn't think that you, the conga line leader, had anything to do with the, like, murder in plain sight.
But also, like, let one of his fellow Survivor players, you know, toast him. What are you, a Real Housewife of Potomac,
doing? Also, can we talk about the amount of, like, leather that the traitors were in this breakfast scene? We had, like, Candace was wearing, like, a Chanel, like, adjacent little set with, like, a leather pillbox hat with, like, and everything is, like, jewel encrusted in this house. Yes. Like, everything that is, like, a button or a pin has to have rhinestones. And then you have Lisa come in, like, a literal, like, latex, not latex, but, like, full leather dress, cape. Leather face. Like, yeah, crazy.
Yeah, leather face for sure. But here's what I'll say. Candace's wardrobe is – Lisa Rinna is insane. Like, I don't expect her to dress anyway but the way she wants to dress. But a lot of people hire stylists when they go on the Traders. Shout out to Charlotte Rose Coleman, number one girl. We love you. Kristen Kish's stylist. And they all do this, like, really elevated Scottish tartan, like, British aristocracy aesthetic for the castle. Right. We're actually not seeing a lot of that this season.
Yeah, I miss that.
And it's one of my favorite things. But, like, Candace is doing a full Jackie O wardrobe.
Yes.
She is, like, doing Americana 1960s, like, politician's wife.
Yes, vibe. Yes. Big, like, headbands and, like, pillbox hats and
such a miss on the aesthetic front. Give us tartan capes and wellies jackets.
I agree. I actually, until you said that, I completely missed that. But yes, I'm craving that.
We don't have enough Argyle. We don't have enough, like, Hunter Green this season. Yeah. Like, where is the – and even Alan Cummings' outfits are, like – completely divorced from the setting.
Yeah, this was normally, like, the one he came in as, like, Big Bird or, like, an egg. Yeah, I couldn't tell, like, what he was going for. Oh, it was a fire?
And his hair is also, like, wild this season. He's, like, dying at every challenge.
Yeah, yeah. Crazy. This was interesting, though. So after the speech and when Alan comes in, he kind of, like, drops a little bit of a what I thought was a pretty obvious hint, like, and I killed him right under your nose. And nobody in the room, like, second guesses that wording. Even though they, like, pick over everything else that other people say wording-wise and completely miss the fact that this was a murder in plain sight. How do you think had they clocked that, this episode or, you know, even the round table would have been different?
I mean, yeah, I think they would have been like, oh, did something weird happen last night? Here's what I'll say. I actually almost didn't even catch the under your nose situation.
Yeah.
Because I think it's just a turn of phrase. They're all living in this weird airport hotel in Scotland. Like, they're all together all the time. I don't think it was – I think if you know, you know, and it's really not subtle. But if you don't know, I do think it's just a very common thing to say when you have 23 it's people true. All together for an entire day.
I wonder if that is, like, a decision they make on the fly, like, depending on how the traders went about it the night before. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually could see production being like, okay, we can't – if we say murdered in plain sight, it's going to be so obvious that Candace had something to do with it. And I think maybe they had to dial that back. Maybe if the traders had been more subtle, they would have, you know, put that out and, like, stirred that. But – yeah, I think – I honestly think that Candace is getting really, really lucky, like, over and over again. At some point, that's going to run out. But, but then hard pivot. We get a round table after breakfast.
Yes. Okay, we have to talk about this. We have to talk about this. So I don't know – like, the round table itself is actually not the most interesting round table. Like, there seems to be really general consensus that Donna is the traitor. And it turns out, like, in an incredible surprise as a viewer, it is. I think that we as viewers were like, there's no way they're going to get a traitor this early. And then they do on their second try.
Yeah.
So all of this to say, I am curious why they did the switch from the round table in after the challenge to before. And my guess – I've heard a few different theories. One theory that I've heard is that, like, she wasn't, like, physically fit enough and they were like, let's put her out of her misery. Mm. I don't know if I really believe that. She raised two NFL athletes, and I think, like,
as Colton loves to obsess about, by the way. Colton is obsessed with Donna's lineage.
Yes. And like, well, he is a former NFL player, so I kind of get it.
I know. It's just funny. It's like the soundbite over and over. Like, yes, she made like two football players.
I honestly think that the bias towards Donna was like way more palpable than even we're seeing, as you said.
And I think agree.
Production
yeah.
was like, okay, let's make this crazy. Like, because yeah. it's going to be even more obvious in the challenge, or maybe because they needed an odd number of people in the challenge. But I actually think that was a fluke. I think that my guess is just like it was becoming so obvious and they needed to do something dramatic with it. And the big drama would be surprising the traitors with who the secret traitor is.
Uh-huh. And they did.
They flipped it like that. Yeah, and they did.
I think you're right. I completely agree with that take. I also think, and a few people in the house said this, I think like Dorinda made this comment. I think, not Ken. Who's the guy that's the singer? Maybe Eric? That's Ken. Eric. There is no Ken. That's right. But they both kind of made a comment that was like, we need this as faithful. It's like, you know, I may not totally believe it, but we need to move past this. And I think I think that was like a collectively held feeling that's like, okay, we got to like just get this person off the board, because it's like if it's a red herring, then it's a red herring. And if we're right, then we're right. And that's great. But like we need to stop kind of obsessing about this one person and start like, you know, she clearly was not going to be like built to last and make it the long way. So like, okay, all good.
Which I think is really interesting. I was surprised that the secret traitor came out in episode 3. I guess they know that they can't leave the audience waiting too long. But I am surprised that they picked someone who isn't as reality TV savvy for the secret traitor. Like, that's actually a big narrative burden to play the first time this like device has been introduced into the game.
Completely
agree. And
they picked
someone who, through no fault of her own, has zero reality television experience, gamer or Bravo style. And so that actually, even though they're not on screen a ton, that actually, like, from a strategy standpoint, from a this, from a that, like, probably weighs very heavily on that person. And like, someone with way more reality TV experience probably would handle that.
Would have crushed. Yeah. Like I said, like, you can see it on her face too. This episode especially, like, she's sweating it. Like, she's not good at hiding it. That's for sure. So I think you're completely right in all that. But I will give her credit. The way that she went out, the energy on announcing like, you got yourself a traitor. I was like, okay, wow. She popped off for that like last 5 seconds. That was really fun. I think she did a great job with that.
Yep. I completely agree.
So fun.
So yeah. So we have a round table at the beginning of the episode. A traitor is found, and all of the traitors who don't know who the secret traitor is are like gobsmacked.
Yeah.
And now they're happy because they get to pick who gets murdered. They don't have to, you know, be at the behest of an old lady. So that's awesome. And then they announce that we're going to go to the challenge now. And they said, partner up with someone you really trust. This is great.
Oh my God.
I love when they make each other, make them rely on one another for survival. It's an incredibly twisted game. And again, this is where the alliances come into play, which we see. And I think maybe Bits, do you want to introduce the roundtable segment to this pod?
Yes. So we've got like a little special thing we want to try out, which is essentially our roundtable segment. This is just a moment, I think it's like more of like a flag that we can throw into the mix during conversation when we want to go a little bit deeper on like one particular player. It might not be somebody that like was featured all that much in this particular episode, but there's something about the way that they're approaching the game that we want to dive a bit deeper into. So, Nancy, do you have a round?
I would like to round table.
Okay.
And I would like to round table on Tiffany. I am really digging for a lot of reasons, but primarily because Michael Rapaport is spitting his head off. He and Jam Jam are like yelling at each other and meow, 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 meow. And everyone, like most lay people, would say like, I don't want to be anywhere near either of them, but particularly Michael Rapaport, who the word I used earlier, odious, I think is the dictionary definition of. But she sees this as an opportunity. She understands that there's the physical game and there's a social game. And she's like, I do kind of think Michael's a traitor. We know he's not. He's just like an idiot, right, a buffoon, a grandstander. But so we know that he's not a traitor. But she's like, if he is a traitor, I want him to trust me. And I want him to need to keep me around. And if he isn't a traitor, I want him to throw people off my scent. So yes, she sees the opportunity here to get him on her side. And she pulls him aside and she spells it out for him in a way that I think like very few people have probably ever hit him over the head except for that guy with the snowball. Like she sits him down and she's like, I get that you want to do what you're doing, but you're playing it wrong. You are not doing yourself any favors. She totally spells it out for him. And we, even though he's still like gross and loud and annoying, it does kind of whip him into shape for the rest of the episode. Like you don't see him acting up or acting a fool after this. Yes. And she's just won herself an incredible ally. I really hope that she makes it and is not a target, because she is really clever and really good at this game. And I want to see her succeed and get this like band of misfits together.
Yes. And she's like, I would say Tiffany and Colton are kind of the only people that are thinking like with any, like paying any mind to alliances. You kind of convinced me on this. When I first watched this, I kind of looked at that as like, oh man, she's like, she's hitching her wagon to the wrong horse here. But I do think like in the conversations we've had around like Michael is just not – he's just not going to be who the traitors go for. He's like too much of a – he
distraction.
Is too much cover for them. Like there's just no way that you want to get rid of that. Keep him in the mix. Keep that suspicion going until you can't possibly, you know, do it anymore. What I'm trying to play out is exactly how Tiffany benefits from that. So people keeping Michael around, but Michael is never going to be somebody that the group fights for. And so I'm trying to reason out exactly. So, you know, the traitors aren't going to want to get rid of Michael. If they get to the point where they realize like, okay, Michael and Tiffany have a thing going, so we can't get rid of Tiffany because if people think it will make people think that Michael isn't a traitor and we need people to think he is a traitor. So I guess, that's the only kind of like,
that's fair. I don't really have an answer for that.
And I'm kind of wondering why she's not, I'm kind of wondering why not only she, but any of the remaining gamers aren't having a bit of a, oh my God, we need to mobilize moment like amongst ourselves. Yeah. And like, we need to start throwing suspicion elsewhere because clearly we're being targeted and clearly that means we are faithfuls and we need to start getting like housewives names out there or like, you know, personalities. So it's, I agree. I do agree. Like you've made me more open to her strategy here, but I still feel like there's a lot of holes but I think also I'm just loving that she's doing anything to this end. I'd like to see similar movement from the other folks in the house.
Yeah, I feel you. Okay, so let's talk about this challenge.
Crazy.
Talk to me about the mechanic here.
So the group gets dragged to like a clearing in the woods. Essentially, we've got how many pairs? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, maybe? And Ron is the odd man out. He's not in a pair. Mm-hmm. We'll talk through maybe these pairs as we talk about performance, but overall, the challenge is that we've got one of the pair that needs to be in the cage and the other needs to be collecting 10 skulls that are kind of like hidden or strewn about the area and then stack those skulls in a tower without it collapsing. And only when they are able to stack these, I don't know what they are, like animal skulls they can like free their partner from the cage. So if they can't get out of the cage, that person is up for murder. Okay, interesting pairings. We talked a bit about Michael and Tiffany. The other one that I loved was just Mara and Rob, the sort of like Love Island pairing. That felt right.
The thing is, she's so smart because she's like, this is a strong, burly man. Like, he's going to win.
Yeah.
And so, like, she's just, like, she was the first one out. Like, she's sitting pretty on all this.
Yes. And I want to see Rob tilt. I want to see Rob, like, use Mara a bit more. Because I actually think that Mara is somebody that, like, faithfuls will listen to. I think she's going to be easy to manipulate, especially Rob. Yep. So I think this, like, sets the stage for more of that to happen.
Yeah. Yes.
Other interesting, we had Candace and Tara, and we had Dorinda and Lisa, which was fun. I'm glad we got that.
Mm-hmm. A pairing I want to talk about is Eric and Johnny. Muir.
What happened?
Did he short circuit? He could not find, in 10 minutes, he could not find 10 skulls. Most of the people within the first 3 minutes found 10
right.
skulls.
And what he's like, on? What did Eric was like, he's an Olympic athlete. What is he doing? Like, he's just like walking around. And he finally found it and was like, dude, the challenge is over. He's like, oh shit. Like, where were you?
He didn't know where he was, but even in the thing, he was like, when he was in the little meadow, he wasn't like, I gotta do this. Like, there was no sense of urgency behind him.
Like, do you think there was like some strategy there? Like, he's just like, I don't care if this guy gets eliminated.
No,
I don't know. Like,
I really don't.
I just think he was like really bad at this.
I think he was really bad at this challenge.
Oh my God.
It was
so
wild to see. Something that we did see was that Colton's shaky hands got the best of him.
I know.
That was bad.
Stinks. That stinks. I'd be shaking too. Mara and Rob end up winning this, but I think the other folks that made it, we had Jam Jam and Steven. Natalie, Monet,
Tiffany and Michael,
and then Candace and Tara. And then I think, on the murder block, we then had Eric, Caroline, Lisa, Kristen and Ron. Mm-hmm. So I guess, Ron just kind of sat in a cage the whole time.
That's he was just funny. By me. That's what I mean. Like, I don't think he was meant to just sit there. I think that he was meant to have a partner. There has to be some production reason why they did the round table first.
I think, they just were like, this is a waste of a, it'll be a waste of a round table later. Like, let's just get it.
Yeah.
It was going to be more fun to surprise the traitors than it would be to like introduce her as a traitor into that like trio.
Yep, exactly. So before we get to the murder, I wonder your opinion. Maybe this turns into a judge table. I don't know. Judge table for those traders listeners or when we get to just rant about something. But what do you think about the fact that they've had a like very limited list of people to pick from each night?
I haven't loved that. I mean, I do think it's interesting that we've had challenges that have been sort of – you know better than I, like, just the oral history of traitors, but I feel –
I am a historian.
I feel like you're an archivist. I feel like this season, even without the shortlist, I feel like the challenges have allowed more shields than previous seasons. Like, I feel like – even without that shortlist, there is still the design of the challenges are such that there's also a shortlist. In ways in the past where like I feel like that was, you know, you had like one or two people max spared. I like I would say I don't love it. I don't love it because it narrows the kind of field of vision in terms of all players on the board, obviously, but I think it's the reason that we saw a lot of gamers leave, and I think it's the reason that we've sort of not necessarily seen as many like alliances spin up because there's been a degree of randomness to who's on the chopping block.
I think that's a really good point. I am the archivist. Early seasons of Traitors is just open season, like all the time.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun as a viewer. I guess it really doesn't change things all that much, but it is kind of annoying, or I am a little frustrated. It's sort of like in Top Chef where they do like three partner challenges in a row or whatever. It's like, let them just be individuals and fight for their own, on their own merit.
Yeah.
And I'm getting to the point where it's like, okay, three episodes in and we've had these restricted murders every single night. Like, I want to see what these traders can do when everyone is an option.
Yes. Yes.
And
agree.
I want to see how they think when everyone is an option.
I will agree. Say
that I do think I really like the Secret Trader. It did add a lot of intrigue as a viewer, but it did like handicap the traders in a way that was like not super interesting because they didn't get to set a strategy early on. And it like it just set off the game in a way that felt a bit stunted in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. Think that the quality of intrigue outweighed the need for good gameplay at the beginning. I, as a viewer, really enjoyed it. But I do think when it comes to the game, like it just added an element of uncertainty that I do think is materially changing the trajectory.
Yes. And I think the other big thing that has materially changed the trajectory is not having a gamer in the turret because there's no incentive now to save any of the gamers.
Yep.
So those I think are the two big decisions that are kind of like shaping the way this season is moving.
And there's also no, it's not an incentive, like there's no voice of reason in there to make them see things with different eyes.
Yeah. It's very, I mean, I do think, this is a question for you. Like, who do you think is going to be the first traitor outed?
I think it might be Lisa.
Mm.
Just because I think she is an easy target. There was a, for the previews for next week, she was like, I don't love that I heard my name. And once someone's name is in the school of Boston Rob, the prophet, once your name is set, once your name is out there, it's going to be out there until you're either banished or murdered. So we'll see. That's my guess. I think Rob is going to play it right to the end. That man is flying so under the radar.
I think he'll be fine. The thing he needs to worry about are the women and if they turn on him.
That is true.
And start like – they get panicky about redirect. I'm going to say Candace only because I just feel like she's really putting her foot in her mouth like a lot. Yeah. And people haven't been clocking it yet, but like I just feel like it's inevitable. But you're right. They did make that comment about Lisa and I could easily see it being Lisa. When do you think we're going to get another – traitor? Do you think we're going to get another
traitor? I think
we're
going to get a recruitment very soon.
Yeah.
And I hope they're smart enough to recruit someone from a different clan because that also fucks up dynamics because I totally agree with you that there is not a strong gamer alliance right now, which feels very counterintuitive. But once you infiltrate another team's alliance, that is really powerful.
Yeah.
Because that person is now in a different position of power within their alliance. And can blow smoke in other directions.
Yes. Oh,
so I
I'm
hope
really
they're smart enough
to
do that. I hope they don't go for another Bravo person. Although if it's Kristen Kish, I'm fine with it.
If they do, I hope they pick Tiffany. I hope it's Tiffany. I think that would be really fun because they're like, okay, she's got Michael's ear. So we can have fun with that. I think that would be the right move. But we'll see
if they're smart enough. But so let's talk about this murder. So as we said, up for murder, we have Eric, we have Kristen, we have, is her name Caroline or Catherine?
Caroline,
thank you. And we have Ron. And it's going to be a murder, not necessarily in plain sight, as they would say, but like a face-to-face murder. And each of them gets a moment to like give their testimonial at the tree tied up. Like,
so silly. What? Okay. Can we talk about the testimonials and like the different approaches? Like we had Ron and Eric go like, please don't. But if you do, I'll fucking murder you. What do you think the benefit of that is? I guess these people are already assuming like they've made the decision and it's just drama.
I think producers, I think they're gaming it out with the producers. They've got like, think about how much time elapsed from when they were in those cages to like late at night when they're doing this shoot. They obviously put them somewhere warm for a while. Like they haven't been outside for hours. But, you know, the producers are probably like, this is your chance. They're like hyping them up probably. They're like, this is your last words on the show. You want it to be iconic. Like you want to go out looking sick. You know, like they're just in their heads.
True. That's a great point. What do we think of our girl Kristen?
I mean, she plays it exactly the way I think Kristen would, which is like, there's nothing I can say to change your mind.
Yeah. Any predictions though on who's going?
I have what I hope happens and I have what I think happens.
Yeah.
What I hope happens is Caroline. They need to throw scent away from the housewives. I know that Portia was eliminated, but like that was a mistake.
Yeah.
The fact that the entire Bravo universe has been spared this entire time is about to be very suspicious.
Yeah.
Maybe not episode 4, but episode 5 for sure. So I think they should do Caroline. I think it, and they're not going to do Ron because he's a great shield. Everyone thinks he's a traitor. Yeah. So they would be really ill-advised to murder him. So then we have Kristen and Eric. Is there another or is that it?
Lisa.
Yeah. Know. Okay. Yeah. So Lisa, whatever. I think it's going to be either Kristen or Eric. I kind of think it's going to be Eric just because he's gotten so little screen time that I think they're setting him up to be like an unimportant character all the way through. Kristen has gotten marginally more screen time than he has.
Right.
I think they don't see Eric as a threat, so they're just like, whatever.
I feel like they're going to – I'm with you. I worry that they're not going to make – I worry that they're not going to make the right choice. I agree it should be Caroline. And I think because they don't pick Caroline, there's going to be exactly what you said, and I think maybe that's the reason why we hear Lisa's name come up.
Maybe they do Kristen because she is technically Bravo, although we know that Top Chef sits in like a very different shelf at Bravo, and so they think that that's satisfactory enough of like drawing
I it's funny too because in the past like couple turrets they've been like and this one will be so random and they're like they'll everybody will be on edge and it's like but the choices that you made previously weren't random. Like you just went for the gamers. So it's actually not random. It's really obvious if you aren't starting to think about like where this person is seated in the, in the like makeup of the house. So
totally,
I think you're right. Like, I think it's probably going to be one of them. I don't think Ron and it should be Caroline, but again, I don't know that, and I think it's going to be dangerous to keep Caroline around because I think Caroline and Colton are, could be a dangerous duo for the traitors.
Well, we'll find out tonight on the next three episodes of the
Traitors.
Stick around, kids, because we'll be doing this all week.
Woo!
Woo! Okay, see ya. Bye.